You're listening to Packers Talk Network.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website at ticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Throws it up in the air, says a prayer, and Janice is on the top! Oh, please! What a cat! That's insane!
You're listening to the best Packer radio show on the internet.
Cheesehead Radio.
Reach the eye.
Get those back.
So I think that's the logical explanation.
Let's just, you know, say that didn't happen.
It was a return to greatness. It was a return to form.
It's crazy. And he just kind of flew under the radar.
Get this out there so I sound good on Cheesehead Radio.
Yeah.
No negativity allowed, sir.
So I think that's actually going to be really exciting to watch. I don't think there's anything positive we can say. There's a lot.
Oh, you were looking for positive. Yeah.
I guess that's what I meant. Positive, I
yeah.
think.
Hello, Packer Nation, and welcome to another episode of Cheesehead Radio. Your hosts tonight are the extraneous C.D. Angeli of PackersTalk.com and Cheesehead TV, the whimsical Michelle Bruton of Cheesehead TV and Bleacher Report. Not with us tonight is Jamie Snowden from Cheesehead TV. And you have myself, Jersey Al, Cheesehead TV, and Packers Talk, sponsoring... The Packers Talk Network this year are, as you probably know, the fine folks at Ticket King. They've been selling Packers, Badgers, and other tickets in Wisconsin just short of 25 years. They've got a great reputation for excellent customer service and prices. They stand behind every ticket, guarantee that it'll be valid and authentic. So be sure to check out their website when you're looking for Packer tickets. The website is theticketking.com. Joining us tonight will be the one and only Aaron Nagler, founder of Cheesehead TV and nowadays social media guru of the Green Bay Press Gazette's PackerNews.com. So let's get this started with some Packers news.
Packers news.
We'll begin the news with the most surprising development of the week thus far, which is that the Packers released running back Nile Davis on Monday, less than 2 weeks after acquiring him from the Chiefs. Davis had only rushed 5 times and caught 2 passes prior to his release. The move would seem to suggest that halfback James Starks will return sooner than later, but he did not practice on Wednesday.
But do you want to know who did return to practice Wednesday? Quentin Rollins. He was limited, but it's a promising development for a secondary that is on its last legs in terms of depth.
Unfortunately, it was one step forward, one step back for the secondary when Dimitri Goodson missed practice Wednesday with a concussion. The Packers will be in serious trouble if both Goodson and Rollins can't go Sunday.
That might explain why the Packers worked out 3 cornerbacks on Tuesday. Good idea. Larry Scott, Duke Thomas, and Cleveland Wallace. These all sound like old Western Cowboys. All 3 were undrafted free agents following this year's draft.
However, it doesn't seem that the Packers are going to use their open roster spot on a cornerback. After J.C. Treader sprained his MCL against the Falcons last week, it sounds like Corey Linsley, who was at practice Wednesday, will be activated off the PUP list, as Treader could miss some time. That transaction had not happened as of Wednesday, but seems like an all but foregone conclusion.
Now, some will say that the Packers should use that open roster spot on a running back, and the team did add Brandon Burks to the practice squad Wednesday. Burks signed with the Packers as an undrafted free agent this spring, but was released in September. However, the Packers cannot activate both Burks and Linsley.
So if you're scratching your head trying to figure out who's going to line up in the backfield for the Packers this week, rest assured that it will probably not be Jordy Nelson. Don't laugh. Recently, we've seen Randall Cobb, Ty Montgomery, and Devontae Adams all take turns back there. But when Ryan Wood asked Nelson what would have to happen for him to line up in the backfield, he said the team would have to be in, quote, deep, deep trouble.
I'm waiting for Mason Crosby to line up in the backfield. He may as well. And speaking of Cobb and Montgomery, both were limited in practice Wednesday. No indication yet on whether the Packers will have one or both of them against the Colts.
And that was your Packers news of the week. Now it's time for your
Packer Tweets from Packer Tweets.
Well, we have a little lesson for all you millennials out there. Watch your social media. Our newest Packer folk hero, Geronimo Allison, was reminded that he once was a master of the not-safe-for-work tweets before he was catching touchdowns from Aaron Rodgers. Zach Cruz guessed that his bosses might have noticed, too, when he tweeted Packers PR at halftime. Hey, Geronimo, mind if we get your Twitter password?
Well, the Packers as a team also are struggling with their identity and what to make of an empty win and a hard-fought loss over the last 2 weeks. Ryan Wood got perhaps the most accurate answer in an interview when he tweeted, "Asked Mike Daniels if this was a step backward for Packers defense. No, it just wasn't a step forward."
Clever, that Daniels. Well, while we might be able to criticize ourselves, we know there is a person who was never allowed to criticize the Packers. It's Skip Bayless. I don't even know why we're mentioning him. But when he trolled Aaron with, "Relax, Aaron, your Packers just fell to 4-3, it was none other than old cohort Tom Crabtree who came to the rescue, zinging him by tweeting, "Yeah, no team has ever done well after a 4-3 start. Oh, wait, what's this? The Rodgers-led 2010 Packers started 4-3? Shut up, dick fart."
Tom okay. Crabtree, nothing if not a hero.
Yeah, always to the rescue.
And finally, since we start out every single news segment with the injury report, we thought it might be easier to simply report who isn't injured. Maybe we'd save some time. To that end, our friend UK Packers gave us a little assist on game day Sunday when he tweeted, "List of healthy players for the Packers today: Aaron Rodgers, Devontae Adams, Waterboy, bus driver, team accountant."
It's one of those seasons for sure, but amidst the cloudy skies of injuries, UK Packers have given us this week's Cheesehead Radio Tweet of the Week.
Tweet of the Week.
I don't think we're keeping our PG-13 rating there, Al.
I read what was in front of me.
You just said that on the air.
Well, who put that in there?
Michelle.
Oh. That Michelle.
You know, it's journalistic integrity to quote things as they originally appeared. We're not in the habit of doctoring or editing quotes around here. We're just reporting the news, sharing the tweet as we see them.
Just doing our jobs here.
All right. Let's kick it here.
The Playbook.
All right, guys, initial thoughts here. I got into a really good argument with Jason Perrone. Jason, of course, hosted tonight, actually, Pulse of the Pack, right here on Packers Talk. We went back and forth. I said this is actually encouraging to have a loss, a hard-fought loss. He came in and says, no, a loss is a loss. All that matters is the W. Nothing else matters. The world is coming to an end. I find it difficult to believe that I have to go out into the Twitterverse and try to be the optimistic, positive force. There's something wrong with, there's like a supermoon or something coming. What do you guys think?
Go ahead, Michelle.
There was a lot of sky is falling type sentiment after this game. And I was honestly quite shocked by that because I felt better about this Packers loss than I did about the win last week against the Bears. I think the Falcons are, you know, maybe not fantastic elite team. I mean, certainly they've caught some lucky breaks this year. They have a lot of talent, but they have their deficiencies, as most teams do, except maybe the Patriots. But, you know, the fact that the Packers hung around in this game, and I think we had a few, maybe all three of you actually predicted 1 point finishes when we did our predictions last week. So, you know, the Packers hang around. They stay within 1 point at the end, and you know, they didn't have any, I mean, God, when you have Dimitri Goodson, Ladarius Gunter, when you have Ladarius Gunter holding Julio Jones to, 29 yards on 3 receptions, something like that. Granted, they had lost their tight end, Tammy, but they still had plenty of other targets running around. I thought there was a lot to be encouraged by.
I had one guy tweet me, "This is Ted Thompson's fault for not having NFL caliber cornerbacks on the roster." So I said, okay, we're supposed to have 8 NFL caliber cornerbacks on the roster, like all every other team does. So when we lose 3, we still have 5 NFL starting caliber cornerbacks on the roster and get that all under the salary cap. Okay. I had a real problem with fans after this game. I really did. The stupidity that was out there. Unbelievable.
Don't hold back, Al. Tell us how you really feel.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
No, I agree. I think that when you look at what the Packers were dealing with the injuries against a team that really had a good offense, and the one thing that I noticed, and I'm just going to say this, Jake Ryan just got burned. I mean, just burned on that last play. But if you look at what happened on that play, he was in the middle of the field. He was expecting a running back or a tight end to come at him. If you watch what happened on that last play where they scored the touchdown, who's the receiver that caught it? I'm sorry, I forgot his name.
Sanu.
Okay. He was way off to the left. They ran, everyone ran out patterns away from Ryan, and they ran Sanu up the field almost parallel with the line of scrimmage, then directly at Ryan, and then off of him. That was a sophisticated offensive play being run against a defense where they knew where the weaknesses were. They knew that it was young. They knew that it wasn't a fully functioning defense. We have watched Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers take their sophisticated offenses and do this to young, dumb defenses for decades. For decades. You got beat on that play because guess what? We have injuries. We have young people in there that aren't fully ready to handle that sophisticated offense. There's nothing to be ashamed of. So Jake Ryan shouldn't be, you know, hung and drawn and quartered or hung out to dry for this. I think it was a 1-point loss that could have easily been a 2-point victory if, you know, Mr. Bracco's prediction about Mason Crosby would have come true last week.
So close. But you know, regarding that play, Dom Capers actually talked about it. On Packers.com, he was interviewed, and got to say, the nice thing about Capers is he actually answers questions about specific plays, you know, and he kind of explained what happened on that play and what went wrong. And what he said was it wasn't really a matchup issue that we had a linebacker on a wide receiver. Because there really was supposed to be a safety there. But as you said, what the Falcons did was they drew up a very effective play and took the safeties out of the middle of the field. You know, they flooded the outside areas with receivers that the safeties had to worry about and then just ran Sanu right up the middle, and there was nobody behind Ryan. So he kind of exonerated Ryan. It's not like that was his assignment to cover a receiver into the end zone. But, you know, it was just a really well-designed play, like you said, attacking the weakness on the field by the Falcons. But, no, now we have to fire Capers because, you know, he didn't have that covered for some reason.
Well, we need to cut Ryan, too. Yeah. That would make sense.
Open a roster spot.
Oh, there we go. Bring Lindsley back. So what's your opinion on that, guys? We do have this open roster spot. We talked about this in the news. We use this on Lindsay, or do the Packers need someone else? We've already done this trade for Nile Davis. Apparently that is officially done. What do you think the Packers need to do at this point?
Well, I today for my Cheesehead TV column wrote about how the Packers need to activate Lindsay. And if the option on the table is activate him to the existing open roster spot, I'm totally fine with that. However, I'll take it a step further and say that I'm fine if they want to cut Don Barclay and give Lindsay his spot, because he has been nothing but a liability when he's been on the field this year. And I think that we have enough depth, especially that we've added this year to the draft, where I'm just not sure there's still a spot for him on this team. But if the option is just straight up, we have a roster spot, who's getting it? Lindsay for sure.
Yeah, he wasn't. I thought I'd seen something on Twitter that he was added to the roster. Or were they just talking about it? Maybe I.
So yeah, it's been very. The language today has been very imprecise. Shame on you, reporters. But yeah, it's from my understanding.
So it wasn't just me. Okay.
Yeah, so he didn't show up on the transaction report today, I believe. It's sort of just the expectation is that he'll be the one that they activate to take that spot.
Okay.
As they should. I mean, I think it's great news that Cheddar only sprained his MCL and didn't have any ACL damage. But, you know, if he misses even 2 to 3 weeks, I mean, that's a significant amount of time. The Packers offensive line obviously has been dealt a rough hand this year in terms of just trying to help out Aaron Rodgers and all of his zany play extension that he's been doing.
Zany? Is that our word?
Zany.
For? Zany.
He's been zany this year.
You know, and sometimes I think out of necessity, sometimes I think out of habit, you know, I think he kind of got into that habit last year with everything that happened with last year and receivers not getting open. He kind of got into that habit of trying to create, but sometimes it's okay to just stay in there and maybe get the ball out a little sooner, you know, because he seemed to have had most issues this year when, surprisingly enough, he had a lot of time in the pocket to just sit back there. It seemed like as he's sitting there, that at that time when receivers are breaking off routes, they're not getting open. And he's had better luck when they're actually running their routes and he's hitting them in stride during their assigned route. So it's kind of a double-edged sword there.
Right, exactly. And I think it's interesting because I know that McCarthy has made a point this year of kind of changing up both the tempo and the play design of the offense a little bit. He's been getting away from the no huddle a little bit. He's been having them take longer to make their play selection, do things to try to make sure that the receivers have time to get open. But I think as we've all seen, some of the best drives the Packers have put together this year are the drives where they go almost exclusively no huddle, where they're getting into a rhythm. And certainly I think that then again, just it circles back around to if you're going to do that, you need to have stellar offensive line play. And we're lucky that Lindsley and Cheddar are, and I don't mean this at all to sound offensive because I'm sure players are sensitive about their value to a team, but in some ways they're interchangeable just in the sense that they have both started with Aaron Rodgers. They both do know the ins and outs of this offense intricately. Not every team can say that they've got someone to replace their starting center with who is also basically another starting center.
Yeah. I mean, that's a real luxury. You'll have very few teams in the NFL that could do that, you know. In a lot of cases, their second center might be an all-purpose player, you know. It's kind of what the Packers have had in the past. You know, they maybe didn't have a designated center who did nothing but play backup center, but one who could fill in at guard, tackle, maybe even center, you know, one of those utility-type guys. And that's what most NFL teams have in order to, you know, preserve roster space and get more skills guys on the field. But, you know, speaking of skillful guys, I think it might be time to talk to our guest.
Nice.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcoming right here is the Cheesehead Randy. I love that music. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, man. That's a blast from the past right there. How are you guys?
Not that long ago.
Exactly. No, not at all.
We're
talking to Aaron Nagler. He is co-founder of CheeseheadTV.com, a little birthplace for all of us here. And, of course, you can now find him over at PackersNews.com, where he is the social media Uber Wunderkind, I think is his official title.
Yeah, that's it. That's on my card.
You may use that, by the way, if you'd like. So, Aaron, what's on your mind tonight? What was your impressions? We were just talking a little bit about the game last week. How did you come out of this? Was this a disappointment? Was it reassuring? Where should Packer fans be at right now in terms of going off the cliff or perhaps climbing back up?
There was a lot of positives you could take away from the game. I know there's a certain section of the fan base, they are very active on social media, and they let me know that, there are no moral victories and, you know, there are no excuses, etc. But I thought, you know, coming into that game, there were a whole lot of folks who didn't even see why the game should be played. I mean, especially when the inactives were announced, it sure seemed like the Packers were going to get rolled, you know. And I think it's just another perfect example of people really underestimating Mike McCarthy. I mean, the fact that they were even in that game was kind of amazing. But to be so close, to be one, you know, point away from basically getting the game in the W column, I thought it was a really impressive job by the whole coaching staff. Obviously one or two things don't go your way and you're left leaving with a loss. But for the most part, I thought you saw Aaron Rodgers get into a groove. I thought you saw Aaron throwing at the top of his drop the way he hasn't been for a good part of the season. I thought the defense, Atlanta marched down the field there at the end, and it's disappointing. But for having to start as many new faces and play so many new faces as they did, and the way they had to play because they were facing such a potent offense, I thought, there was a lot of promise there. And I don't need to remind Packers fans, the last time the Packers had a close loss in the regular season in Atlanta, how things ended up turning out back in 2010, You never know. The season's got to play out, but I thought there was a lot of positives you could take away from the game.
Yeah, I thought so, too. I think Packer Nation is very used to jumping off the cliff very quickly, and sometimes they do. But a lot of hope for the rest of the season. A lot of people drawing comparisons to 2010. Now, to me, I don't know about you, Aaron, this gives me just a sick feeling in my stomach, because I'm a firm believer that 2010 is kind of the exception to every rule. But a lot of people want to say, hey, we lost 70 players due to injury.
Mm-hmm.
And we were the sixth seed in the playoff and we won the Super Bowl. So it's bound and determined to happen again. Any feelings on that whole 2010 comparison?
Well, I don't think, when people bring that up, I don't think it's a direct comparison. I think, yes, there are things you can point to and say, wow, these are really similar, et cetera. But I think it's more in line with, you've got to let the season play out. Because there are so many people who, I've got a guy who calls in, I do my weekly voicemail video. I had a gentleman who I used one of his voicemails early on in the season. He now messages me every week on Facebook or Twitter or some, however he can try and reach me to let me know, how few games the Packers are going to win now. Like last week he was saying now they're only going to win six games. And then after Sunday's game, he was there to tell me that they weren't going to win another game for the rest of the year. And it's just for those types of people, I just want to say, let it play out. You have to let it play out. Remember back when you talk about 2010, remember after the Detroit game when Rodgers left, late in the first half with a concussion, they lost that game in Detroit. Everyone thought, I remember that week following that game, everyone wanted Mike McCarthy fired. It was just bedlam, and Packers fans were ready with their pitchforks. And you just have to keep saying, you got to let it play out. And I think that's the parallel more than anything else. It's not a question of okay, the seasons are going to be exactly the same. I think it's just a good reminder, you've got to let it play out, because everyone thought that team was dead, and then they came back and won the entire thing. So, yeah, I don't think the comparisons are apt in regards to, going in all the things that people are trying to draw comparisons. So I know our friend Zach Cruz has had a running list on Twitter, kind of jokingly, but... for the most part, I think it's mostly just, you let the season play out, because you've got to let that happen.
All right. Al?
Aaron, your new colleague, Bob McGinn, which feels good to say that, right?
Definitely.
I enjoy reading his stuff tremendously, but, let's face it, he is the gadfly of the Packers media corps, right? So he takes some swipes at Aaron Rodgers for not being able to lead the team down the field with 30 seconds left for the second time in the game, which then, of course, gets everyone started on the canard, and I'm using that word just for you, that Rodgers is in clutch. Do you give any credence to that at all?
To the not clutch thing? Not really. I just think there's just so many different kind of, things in play. There's so much context that needs to be filled in when you're talking about, I know the thing that everyone points to is the record in comeback victories, et cetera, or it was, fourth quarter comebacks. And there's just so much that goes into it. I can't ever say this guy is clutch and this guy isn't, because there's 10 other dudes on the field trying to make stuff happen with him. Now, all of that said, I've long said I'd much rather watch/have a guy at the quarterback position who's going to try and make a play, who's going to maybe make a mistake, and that's how they're going to go down, etc., as opposed to somebody like Aaron Rodgers, who is not going to make that, is not going to try and make the play where he might make a mistake. He wants to live, fight another day, et cetera. And because of that, I think, he's been very successful. The Packers have been very successful on offense, but it's just that one little thing that kind of just, for whatever reason, he's kind of cautious to a fault, I think. And that is just me being hyper particular about what I like to watch on the football field. I don't think it means that there's anything in regards to, you know, the clutch gene or some, you know, this guy's more clutch than the other guy. He may be quote unquote more clutch, but he may also have a better coach, a better scheme, a better teammate, etc. So I just think there's like way too much in play to talk about a guy being clutch.
Yeah. So you're saying Favre over Rodgers for you?
Man, you know.
That's what you just said.
Yeah, I catch hell for it all the time, but yeah, I mean, that's okay. Why I go to the ballpark. That's why you go to the ballpark, right? I don't go to the ballpark. I don't turn on the television to watch a guy be careful. I go to watch him make a play, you know? So that's kind of always how I've been, you know, when I'm watching the game. But again, I know Rodgers has been hyper successful and he's got the numbers to prove it, and you can't really argue with that.
Okay. Michelle?
Yeah, I think just to quickly add my 2 cents about that, I think the mark of a good game is something like the Lions game last year, where you're literally sitting at home on a couch by yourself with no one around, and you just start screaming because something incredible happened.
Amazing
and
you hope happens. Exactly.
Yeah, and you hope there's a play like that. I mean, once every game is being a little bit too stingy, but you're hoping for that a couple times a year. Those are the things that really create a body of work.
Absolutely. Very much so. Very much so.
Okay, so you've long been one of my favorite Twitter follows, and one of the reasons why are the insightful videos you share after the games each week showing some of the important plays. You do those with Vine now, and I guess Vines are going to be no more, right? So you'll have to find another way to share your videos. But, so the question is, what did you know, we can sort of do that virtually here for a second. What did you notice specifically about the receivers this week? I saw some crossing routes, and obviously we got some Devontae Adams in the backfield action. But I was just sort of generally more encouraged with McCarthy's game plan and play design this week when it came to the receivers. Was there anything you saw to be, you know, contrary, or do you sort of agree that things were getting a little mixed up this week?
I think he's been forced to kind of, you know, get out of his comfort zone a little bit. And I think he still didn't do a ton as far as, you know, bunch sets or try to rub routes and things like that to get guys open. But I think McCarthy did do a great job of kind of, you know, changing things up a little bit, especially with guys like Geronimo Allison and Trevor Davis, etc. It's funny too, because you watch the tape, you don't see a ton of, you know, it's not like the guys are blazingly open all of a sudden. It really was, to me, much more a case of Rodgers getting to the top of his drop and firing the football in a way that he hasn't this year. And it's not that the guys were more open than they have been. They were pretty much kind of the same in the routes and the coverages, especially in the second half when they went to man, for the most part, Atlanta did. It wasn't that much different. It was just Aaron being comfortable and for whatever reason, trusting his guys in a way that he really hadn't up until this point. So, you know, I think McCarthy has done a good job, kind of, you know, basically having to retool his offense on the fly, so to speak. But I also think a big part of it was Rodgers just finally kind of, letting go and trusting his receivers. Like the touchdown to Trevor Davis, to me, is the perfect example. He throws that ball well before Davis is even out of his brakes. And that's just something you haven't seen a whole lot, especially to a kid like Trevor Davis, a rookie who he's barely thrown to in his career, you know. Those are just the type of throws that Rodgers has not pulled the trigger on this year and going back to last year. And for whatever reason, the light kind of came on Sunday against Atlanta, and I'm very interested to see if that continues Sunday against the Colts.
The kind of thing where – oh, sorry, Al. I was just going to say, it's the kind of thing – yeah, it's the kind of thing where this is obviously so obvious, but you forget that when Rodgers first, you know, came into the league, I mean, he had guys who could do this in their sleep. He had so many veterans. He had, you know, on one team, Greg Jennings, Donald Driver, James Jones, Jordy Nelson, and all of a sudden we're expecting him to look like the same player with Ty Montgomery and Trevor Davis and Jeff Janis. And it's not to say that the offense shouldn't be adapting, but certainly, I mean, life is very different now for Aaron Rodgers than it was, you know, 6 years ago.
Very much so. Very much so. Although I'm glad you said Jeff Janis, because I did want to mention there was this particular play. I think it was in the first quarter or the third quarter. They were going left to right, where Atlanta, for one of the very few times, brought pressure. I think they brought 5. And, you know, the line slid to its right, and Rodgers threw a ball, well before Janis was out of his break. You know, it was on an out route. You know, it's a simple throw. You know, it's not a major play or anything, but it was the type of thing where they needed a route adjustment. Rodgers completely trusted Janis to be there, and Janis was there. And they completed, you know, the pass and got a first down. And that is just it's those little things where those are the types of plays that have not been there at all in this offense for, like, basically a year and a half. And to see a guy like Jeff Janis, who's had a real tough time being in the right place at the right time, to see him make the right adjustment and Rodgers trust him to do so, again, I think that's a big step for the offense.
Definitely.
Okay, Aaron, you had a fantastic interview with David Bakhtiari on your Nagler's Never Right podcast this week. Great
Thanks.
Listen. Hey, you brought up a great point that you guys got into about how the Packers tackles really have a tougher job in pass protection than tackles on most other teams because of how often the Packers throw and they rarely give any help to the tackles and, you know, lack of a running game, certainly recently. Now, on the other hand, you know, I think Rodgers is very adept at avoiding pressure while in the pocket and letting their tackles kind of take their men out of the play. So do you think that at some point, at some level, kind of cancels out and evens out the other factors?
A little bit. I think, you know, you definitely do see, and there are plays where it's designed like that, you know, where you can tell Bulaga and Bakhtiari are both kind of just pushing their guy wide, knowing that Rodgers can step up and around it, so to speak. And then there are, you know, plays where they're just straight up pass blocking and Rodgers needs to escape. It's funny because teams don't kind of pin their ears back as much as they used to when it comes to playing the Packers because kind of the book is out now. You know, you want to keep Rodgers in the pocket because they all know he wants to get outside, you know. So you've seen a lot more kind of mush rush. You saw it, the Giants really did a lot of it earlier this year where the guys kind of run upfield, but they're not really pinning their ears back trying to push, kind of squeeze the pocket. They're trying to stay in rush lanes and keep Rodgers hemmed in because they know the problems that the receivers have had getting separation. But that said, you know, I think Rodgers' ability, you heard David talk about it in the interview, where it's just, you know, I loved what David said, you know, I'll do whatever I can to give him as long as he can to make the magic happen. You know, and that's a pretty good way of putting it. You know, it's a pretty good way of putting it because, you know, we've all seen Aaron get outside the pocket and make some insane plays. So I think they definitely do work in concert. But, you know, obviously you're still being asked to kind of backpedal and take on premier pass rushers over 50 times a game. That's a tall task for anybody in the NFL.
Certainly is. All right. Michelle?
All right, so looking forward to this weekend a little bit, the Colts are just such a sad team in so many ways. And
that's a good way of, that's a good way to put it. That's a very good way of putting it.
And on defense, they're allowing the second most passing yards per game of any defense in the league this year. So my question is, what is Rodgers' ceiling on Sunday? Or if a defense is this bad, is there a ceiling?
Oh, that's a really good question, especially at home, especially able to use the hard count, maybe get him to jump, get some free plays, et cetera. Man, I don't know. Now, all that said, you know, they could come out and run Don Jackson 20 times for all we know. You know, that's the thing. Like, for a long time, McCarthy and this offense was very much a we're going to run our stuff and you can try and stop it type of offense, to much to, you know, some people's frustrations, including people on the offense. But this year, it's funny, especially in the last 3 or 4 weeks, they've been forced, because of all the personnel issues, to kind of become a game plan team where they really are adapting what they're trying to do week to week in a way that they haven't done in a long time. So I'm very interested to see. Now, if they line up much like they did in Atlanta, I don't know what the weather's supposed to be like on Sunday, but if they're able to just spread it out 4 or 5 wide, you know, Devontae Adams in the backfield now, who knows? Ty Montgomery's probably back, et cetera. And they can just let Aaron, like, rip it 45, 50 times. Yeah, sure, I don't see any reason why he couldn't have 300, 350 yards, you know, a couple touchdowns, like 3 or 4 touchdowns. I mean, it's going to be that type of game because you also know on the flip side, the Andrew Luck and company are going to probably be pushing the ball too. I mean, I know we're waiting to see if T.Y. Hilton's going to play, but, you know, I think this is the type of game where there's going to be a lot of passing yards for both teams. So, yeah, there's definitely a high ceiling for Rodgers on Sunday.
Yeah, in some ways it's kind of similar to the matchup they had against the Falcons, just in the sense that you've got two offenses that have the potential to be kind of high octane and two defenses that are really struggling against the pass.
Yeah, very much so. Couldn't agree more. Well, we'll see. I mean, I think a lot will depend on the play up front for both teams, obviously. But specifically, if I think the Packers have a much better chance of getting to Andrew Luck and upsetting his rhythm, just because their offensive line is so atrocious, than the Colts do of getting to Aaron Rodgers and upsetting his rhythm. I outside of Robert Mathis, there's just not much there for the Colts, as opposed to the Packers, who have a good number of guys who should be able to find advantageous matchups against that Colts offensive line.
Definitely.
So last Sunday, the severely undermanned Packers defense can't stop the NFL's top offense near the end of the game, and suddenly the Fire Capers army reappears. Aaron, what can you do to help out these people? What can you tell them?
You know, I tried. I led my podcast with it this week. It's just I get that it's frustrating, and I get it's emotional, and people want, you know, action, and their action is always to get, you know, fire the coach. But, you know, I think Packers fans need to realize how lucky they are to have Dom Capers as the defensive coordinator. And I loved his session with the media on Monday, because the guys did not hold back. You know, they asked the questions that needed to be asked about every play, every big play. And Dom, you know, to his credit, he stood up there and he took it, and he gave the answers that he needed to give. And I especially loved his bit about, you know, blitzing more, because he absolutely was right when he says that they didn't get Matt Ryan out of a rhythm, you know. Other than that sequence where Daniels and Peppers had back-to-back sacks, they did not do a whole lot to get in Matt Ryan's face. Part of that was he was getting the ball off really very quickly because he was able to get it off in rhythm. But, you know, that's an adjustment that has to – that's why I'm talking about, like, the work that needs to get done up front against the Colts offensive line. But, you know, Dom Capers has forgotten more about football than any of us will ever know. And the fact that he is being handed – this kind of makeshift secondary week after week, and they're even in these games, is pretty incredible. And the fact that, you know, they held the number one scoring offense in the league to a couple of field goals early on in the game, that's the only reason they were even in the game, you know? And you come down to it, I was surprised, actually, when they held them to field goals early on. I thought this was a game where, you know, the Falcons were going to come out and score. It was going to be 14-0, like 21-7, something like that. And, you know, they kept them in check, and that's a testament to Capers. So I get it. Like I said, I know it's frustrating. I know people get kind of emotional about it, but Dom Capers is very, very good at his job.
All right, Aaron, this is going to be the hardest question we're going to ask you all night. The most hard-hitting question.
I love it.
Are you ready?
I love it. I'm ready.
At what point in the game is there no longer a lot of ball game left?
Nice. Very nice. Well, you know, it all depends. It's different from game to game. Sometimes it can be quite early. Sometimes it can be, you know, with you know, 3 seconds left, maybe there's a lot of ball game left. You know, it all depends on the situation. Ultimately, you know, when the clock hits zero, that's when there's not a lot of ball game left. But until then, there's always a lot of ball game left.
It's like Wayne Larrabee and his dagger. You know, you can't say it too soon, but you got to find the perfect moment.
Well, I do love how it's kind of become a thing now where, like, at some point in the second half of every single Packers game for the last, like, 2-3 years, at some point I get a kind of a cascade of tweets from people asking, is there a lot of ball game left, or how much ball game is left, or is there still a lot of ball game left, et cetera. Like, it happens every week. And I do love that people have kind of glommed onto it. It really was just something my dad used to say when we were growing up. We'd be watching, and I'd be depressed because the Packers were losing all the time. And, you know, Dad would always say, a lot of ball game left. From his easy chair, you know, a lot of ball game left. And he would say it all the time. So, to me, there was always a lot of ball game left. And that's the other thing, though, because you watch NFL football, and there always is. That's the thing. Like, people
– weird things happen.
Teams jump out to big leads, et cetera, and people are like, oh, it's over. And you're like, no, you got to let it play out. And then, sure enough, that's what teams come back, weird things happen, et cetera. Always a lot of ball game left.
Definitely.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the amazing Aaron Nagler. You can follow him on Twitter at Aaron Nagler. And, of course, follow everything that he does over at PackersNews.com, where he is, what do we say, you are the social media uber wunderkind.
Yeah, that'll work. That's it.
Good.
I'm changing my nameplate as we speak.
Please do. Please do. I'm sure Doherty will love that. But anyway, hey, thank you very much for joining us tonight, Aaron. And honestly, like I said, we've kind of grown up in this whole blogosphere stuff together over the last 8-9 years. So pleasure to have you back, and pleasure to have your company once again, and keep doing great stuff.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right, Aaron.
Absolutely. All right. Night, Aaron.
Thanks, Aaron.
Have a good night.
That was pretty cool.
Absolutely.
Al, when did you start writing? What year?
When did I start writing? I went to kindergarten.
Michelle,
I was
5 years old.
What grade was Michelle when you actually started your blogging?
What time did I start? I'm going to say it's probably been about 6 or 7 years, maybe.
Okay.
I started Bleacher Report. At that time, anybody could just start an account at Bleacher Report and start writing, and people were reading it. So, well, this is interesting. And that's how it started.
I started Tundervision.
Some of those riffraff.
Yeah. Go ahead.
They still let some of those riffraff hang around. I don't know. Somehow I'm still on their payroll. I don't know how that happened.
No, I started Tundervision.com, I think, in 2008. Okay. So I've been writing since that. That's crazy. How old were you then, Michelle?
In
2008? Please tell me you were please tell me you weren't in middle school.
Dear Lynch.
Oh, okay, never mind.
Polite.
Well, you're the one who had to say 8 years. Like that's easiest to track.
Oh, that's what you were doing.
Anyway,
I'm not shy about my age. I graduated high school in 2007.
Okay. Oh, good. Okay, good. Well, that's at least a positive.
That's good. That's okay with you. Okay, good.
It's a positive. Yeah. All right. I don't feel that old. Anyway, I'm very old millennial. I am. Let's get to this week's
Hot Pocket.
Oh, nailed it on the volume.
Yeah, perfect.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
I had to max it out. Seriously. 6 years we've been doing this. Anyway, Hot Pockets, we have a final quick discussion topic. So, Jerz Yao, hit us with your Hot Pocket.
Well, at first I was gonna go with why are fans so stupid, but I'm not in the mood for ranting, and we kind of talked about it a little bit with Aaron, so I'm not going to go with that one. Instead, I'm going to go with, for me, the question that, or the thing I'm wondering about for this game is, will there be a running game? I mean, who is our running back? Is it Don Jackson? Is Ty Montgomery coming back? Are we moving Ripkowski to halfback? I mean, there's just nothing but question marks, so question is, will there even be a running game?
We don't need no stinking running game.
That's right.
Ooh,
I think that was that was a Corey Behnke thing. Why run when you can win back in the day? when Rodgers was at his absolute, you know, top level, and they were just destroying teams on offense, and he always used to say, "I'm Packers transplant. Why run when you can win?"
Unfortunately, they're not winning. But other than that, it's a great theory.
Well, at the time, it worked.
Right.
They were like 15-1 that 1 year, so it was working then.
It was until the playoffs. And, yeah,
well,
exactly.
We all know that.
All right. Michelle, your Hot Pocket.
All right. So Aaron mentioned this a little bit during his segment, but the Colts offensive line, I think, is kind of the key position group to watch this weekend. It's real bad, guys. And they tried so hard to beef it up this offseason, and it's just not working. They have allowed the most quarterback hits and the most sacks on Andrew Luck of any quarterback in the league this year. And, I mean, when you kind of separate him from the rest of the team, Luck's been pretty good this year, but he can only do so much. So I would like to see the Packers really take advantage of that in the way that they maybe weren't able to do as much against Matt Ryan. Julius Peppers, Nick Perry, Mike Daniels, all at least have a sack. I just want to see, you know, a 4 or 5 sack game, just really take advantage of that awful offensive line. I think that's the best matchup the Packers have going for them, is their front seven against that O-line.
Do you get the feeling, Michelle, that this is almost a game, this is like a college game where a top-ranked team is going against, like, Northeast Central Boise, Idaho State, and you have to win by 50 to maintain your ranking. I'm almost worried that if this game is actually competitive, as poor as the Colts are, you're like, oh, my God, what does that mean? And there's going to be more lemmings jumping off the cliff. And from everything we're saying, this should be a cakewalk.
Yeah, and I think that's why, you know, at least for me, I don't feel any sort of distress about the loss last week because I think the Falcons, I hold them in pretty high esteem. I save my freaking out for when the Packers lose to a team like the Colts. And I think that, you know, at this point in the year, once you start, if you do start losing to teams that are like the Colts are, you're really not giving a very compelling picture of your playoff run potential.
And I think that was the point I was trying to make with Jason this week too, is that, you know, he was saying, well, these games don't matter, you know, you got to win these games. I said, no, these games actually are good barometers for what you're going to be able to do later. You know, Atlanta's a good team. It's a quality team. You played them tough. That gives you a sign for things in the future, especially if you're back at full strength.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and that lingering silence means it's time for my hot pocket. I think one thing you have to look at, I'm just going to talk a little bit about the defense, and it's amazing because I think we've seen this over the years where we just never seem to get both the offense and defense really playing at a high level together at the same time. And most of the time it's been the offense that's played well, and it's always fire capers. And once again, as the offense has struggled, the defense has really stepped up over and over and over again. However, they did allow 32 points last week, and I think the big thing that's missing, especially if you want to draw any comparisons to 2010, is the turnovers. How many dropped interceptions, hands on the ball, have we seen this year so far? Count them.
Eight.
Yes, exactly correct. There's been eight dropped interceptions, things that should have been there. In 2010, that's how we rode our way to the Super Bowl. We have these critical interceptions. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that is the missing key, and Dom Capers would love to see him work on that with the defense. Got to get those turnovers because that really could spell the difference in a lot of games down the stretch as we start going against some quality teams.
You know, that's actually something else that Capers even mentioned that in his interview. You really should go on Packers.com and check it out. It was really a nice job by him, you know, and he's talking about that last drive and philosophically about, you know, what he would have liked to do but couldn't because of the personnel that he had to work with. And then he even slipped in and, you know, we had an interception right in our hands there. We make that play and that's it. It's a different outcome, you know. And I thought it was interesting for a coach to say that, but 100% correct. So I like your hot pot. First
time
in a while. First time in a while.
Thank you very much, Jersey Al. Let's get to this week's predictions.
Cheesehead Radio. Packers game predictions.
I can't have the volume right on all of them, otherwise it would just be too good.
That wasn't awful.
It wasn't horrible. The Green Bay Packers return to Lambeau Field to take on the somewhat apt Indianapolis Colts. I think you've already heard us talk a little bit about how this should be a nice, easy win. Let's take it around the horn and see what our crack Cheesehead Radio staff thinks about this game. Michelle, we're going to start with you. Michelle,
right,
by
so
the way, the
I'm
only
going...
person who picks the Packers ever to lose, so I'm interested to see what she says this week.
And I have been right both times, have I not? I believe I have. Maybe I'm what's causing it. Maybe I'm the problem.
It's all right, your
well,
fault.
I'm not picking them. My house gets egged. All right, well, I'm not picking them to lose this week. That would be insane. I'm going Packers 31, Colts 20. This Colts defense is just awful, and it's allowing opposing quarterbacks 287 yards a game on average. And just in general, the Colts, unfortunately, really don't have a lot of talent on either side of the ball, aside from Andrew Luck, who's kind of wasted on them at this point in time. I think the only reason the Packers may not put the Colts away more handily is that they still look to be down more than just a handful of their key players in Week 9. At this point, we don't know if Cobb, Montgomery, Rollins, Goodson will play. So, you know, I think if they're healthy, this is a blowout. Otherwise, I think 31-20 is a pretty healthy guess.
All right. Michelle says 31-20 Jersey Al. Can you top that?
Well, you know, all this talk about blowouts and how bad the Colts are and how the Packers should roll over them. Well, you know, that in the past, if history is any indicator with the Mike McCarthy's teams, whenever they go into a game expected to roll over the other team, it generally doesn't happen. Now, they may still win the game, and I know they will win this game, but they will find a way to make it closer than it needs to be. I'm going with a score of Packers 33, Colts 24.
I knew right where you were going with that.
Okay.
You know, it should be a blowout. Mike McCarthy, I knew where that was going. All right, my name is C.D. Angeli, and I'm going to say, you know what, the Colts just are terrible. The Packers are the greatest team in the entire world, and I'm going to channel Jamie right now, and I'm going to predict the Packers are going to win 78-3.
Seems legit.
So you took your score and Jamie's score and added it together. Is that what happened?
And I think I subtracted your Colts score or something like that.
There you go. All right, good. Now we know the algorithm, so we're good.
It was very scientifically. That was my algebra at work there. So. All right, we ready to take this one out? Jersey, are you ready?
Okay, it's me this week. Yeah, I am ready.
It's you. Okay, deep breath.
Deep breath. All right, thank you all so much for joining us tonight on Cheesehead Radio. And thank you to our special guest, Aaron Nagler. Make sure you head on over to PackersTalk.com where you can explore several unique Packers podcasts. Please follow Packers Talk Net on Twitter and like the Packers Talk Network page on Facebook. Cheesehead Radio and all Packers Talk podcasts are available on iTunes. Just Google Packers Talk iTunes and you will find it. Be sure to subscribe and please leave us a nice review if you can. You can also listen by using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or your favorite podcatching app and just search for Packers Talk. Finally, please be sure to support our sponsor, Ticket King. You can find them on the web at theticketking.com. That's theticketking.com. That's a wrap for tonight. Go Pack, go.
Well, I'll see you next week here on Cheesehead Radio. Good night. Go Pack, go.
Good night, all.
Good night.
When you don't go to geico.com, car insurance can be hard. Like early 90s heavy metal hard.
I'm yelling and screaming and I'm loud. Roar!
Geico makes it easy. You can review and update your policy or report a claim on geico.com or the Geico mobile app. Because shouldn't we all have a little less stress in our lives?
I'm not even upset about anything.
Run to Old Navy right now to get 30 to 50% off all jeans and all sweaters for everyone in the family. Pair your favorite jeans with any of Old Navy's stylish sweaters and get 30 to 50% off from top to bottom. Every pair of jeans is on sale, including Old Navy Rockstar jeans, and so are the season's best sweaters. All jeans and all sweaters are 30 to 50% off now at Old Navy or oldnavy.com. But you better hurry. This deal won't last. Run to Old Navy. Valid 11/2 to 11/8.